Business Matters in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell and you're welcome to Business Matters. Later in the programme, I'll be speaking to well-known Letterkenny barber, Jerry McKeever, who has just published his first book. But first, as business life continues to return to normal, Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce is getting ready for an annual awards ceremony with a difference this year. I spoke to the Chamber's CEO, Tony Forrester, about this year's event.
Yeah, so this year's a bit different. We couldn't do it last year at all. So this year we've decided to do a bit of a scaled back version. We're not doing our ball gowns and our black tie, unfortunately. So we will be filming it and relaying it live in November. But we thought we want to celebrate some of the real achievements people have done over the last 18 months. You know, we've had people coming in and saying, oh my God, that business was so good to me, or that business delivered groceries to my mother when nobody else could.
How important is it to hear that sort of feedback now, Tony?
Oh, it's amazing. Because businesses went that extra mile. You know, their doors were closed, but if somebody needed something, they were out doing it. And we've watched our businesses struggle, you know, so much this last 18 months. So we thought, why not just do some awards this year, celebrate some of those achievements. And then, so our categories are funny, or different, should I say, this year. You won't recognise them from 2019.
Talk to me about the categories.
So we have seven. Our first one is Business Excellence. So we would have had that before, and that's about celebrating people who are really good at what they do. You know, it could be any type of business. And we want to hear how they're different from everyone else. Then we go Best Local Online. And part of the reason for that one was about celebrating a business that had to go online during the lockdown, or that their online really took off. You know, that they're now servicing the whole of the island where they were only doing local before. So that's a wee bit about how we service online.
And have there been many businesses in that category?
There's quite a number. We actually had an event, a retail event, a few months ago. And one particular business had been doing a bit of social, but they'd used their social media to sell while they were closed. And it just changed their whole business. It was Dress Me Ireland. It's a totally different brand and everything. So, you know, you have to celebrate those wins as well. And obviously we as a chamber are always encouraging local buying, so, or local shopping. So we want to encourage people when they're going online to buy local. And that's kind of one of the reasons for that. We have Sustainable Superstar. And this is around this Sustainable Development Goals that we're all talking about now. We're probably hearing it on the press as climate change, but there's so much more involved in that. That'll be a tight little group, we think, but we know there's businesses out there that are adopting sustainable development in their mission statements. So we'll be doing a big call out for that. We have the best use of social media, which is slightly different from selling online. And again, there's been businesses that just have excelled.
What's the difference?
So selling online is you have a website and you can purchase on their website. Social media could just be that they have changed, that they have pushed their brand through social. We're all using social media now. I know we still use Highland and we still advertise, but our social media has gone up a notch for everybody. You know, we all said Facebook was going to be dying off, but actually we're all still on it. And I've seen Instagram grow for us as a chamber and Shop LK, but so it's about celebrating that and those people who have put their brands out there. We have Excellence in Export, and again, it's something we would have had before, and that's about the businesses in Donegal who are exporting across the world and have maybe in the last 2 years increased their exports. We have Health and Wellbeing, and that's a company who, or a community organisation possibly, who have health and wellbeing at the centre of their operations. So it's not necessarily a company that works in health and wellbeing, just be that they have a project or that they celebrate their staff or help their staff with their own health and well-being. And mental health could probably come in there this year in particular.
And that came to the fore very much in the last 18 months.
It certainly did. And we're all talking about how we're going to get, I mean, even bringing employees back, there's going to be issues. So it's really that kind of how do we, I suppose, have a duty of care to staff and to our community. As we come out of the pandemic, I think that's just so important. And then we have our last category is innovating in a pandemic. And we've had a few in for this already. So people who just pivoted their business, changed the way they did things completely because they had to, but actually that it's paying off for them. We have loads of examples of that, of just people who only do appointments now, people who only are all work from home still and maybe aren't intending to go back to the office. So there's loads of examples there. And we're really looking forward to hearing those stories.
Tony, how can our listeners apply and how can they get involved in the scheme?
Yeah, so it's open to anyone. And I'll make this very clear. You do not have to be a Chamber member to apply. Obviously, we'd love you to join, but you don't have to. So anyone can apply or anyone can nominate someone else. The applications are all online on our Chamber website. Just go to the LetterkennyChamber.com, go into Business Awards, and they're all listed there. You just fill in a form. There's about 5 questions per form, and you can apply for more than one category if you want. Closing date is the 8th of October.
Okay. And when will the event itself and when will the winners be announced, Tony?
So we hope to do shortlisting the week after the 8th of October, whatever that week that is. And we will then announce, we'll probably have 3 per category. We'll put those out in social media. People can vote for their favourite. And then our judging panel will decide who the final winners are. We'll record it then and put it out on, we hope, around the 19th of November.
Okay.
But we'll be flagging that all up in social media as well.
No problem. Tony, how has the life of the Chamber changed over the last 18 months?
Well, yeah, it's been interesting. So we ourselves were working at home for most of last year, on and off. I think we got to open for 3 weeks at Christmas. So it was a challenge, and there's really only 2 of us and the staff who were working from home. But I suppose we grew in confidence to a certain extent. We feel that the Chamber was there to answer questions from anyone. So we most people will know we set up a WhatsApp group that included other businesses. And initially when we did that, that was all about getting information out. And the feedback we have had is that people really valued information, especially last April, May, when the government were bringing out their schemes. And we were there trying to be there at the end of the phone the whole time. So it was a bit of a challenge, you know, hadn't got a laptop, had to get a laptop, had to do all of that stuff. And also try and service our other customers for our gift cards, for example. So it was a challenge for us, but we got there. We also have a great board, you know, our Chamber Council, who we've structured it very well in the last while. So we have subcommittee heads and, you know, they're really active. These are voluntary people who run businesses and who are really busy in their own right. But they come along and meet with us and help us frame everything we do. So it's been a really interesting time. But it's funny, I met someone who I hadn't seen for a while, and he said, and he had been a president of the Chamber years ago, and he said, I'm very proud of the Chamber. And I thought, thank you. And I said, thank you, and thought, yeah, that's a nice thing to say. So I suppose it's that bit of being reactive. I started in the Chamber in 2008, and the recession started in 2009 or 2008, depending on your industry. And that was a challenge, I have to say. This was similar to that, but I suppose we were all in the same boat to a certain extent this time around, and it all happened at once.
Sorry, Tony. Is there a sense of normality returning now?
I feel there is. Yeah I do. We just had a meeting the other night, and people were saying, you know, yeah, the footfall mightn't be exactly what it was. And some businesses kept going the whole time, so we have to remember that. And some sectors have been busy the whole time. But yes, there's definitely a normality coming back. I suppose, would we like to see our hospitality? We know they're busy in terms of bookings, but I suppose that the normality of just being able to go in and have a coffee without any checks and without maybe without masks, we don't know, would give it all back to where we feel we should be. But our, because the businesses have been so good at trying to get their customers back, you know, they're doing everything they can, and it's lovely to see it, you know.
It's a busy time at the Chamber. Into the West event is another event that's coming up shortly. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so we've had this series of events called Into the Northwest, and this is our third one coming up. It's happening on the 29th of September. It's on Zoom, so anyone can join from anywhere. At 29th of September, sorry, at 12:30 to 1:30, so we keep them to an hour. So it's going to be a chat with, it's called the Entrepreneurial Edit, and it's going to be a chat with three business people from very different sectors who have scaled their businesses. So we're delighted to have David Gilday from Druva, and people might remember David. He got an acquisition for his business a few years ago. We have Philip O'Doherty from E&I Engineering, who again has had massive news in the last few weeks, and Larissa Feeney from Accountant Online. So they're very different, but so it's like a fireside chat, and we'll just have a chat with them for the hour, and people will be allowed to ask questions. So anybody's welcome to come to that. They've been really successful events so far, and we think this one is even more attractive. Entrepreneurship is very important to the whole whole of our Northwest economy. And these three people are great examples of people who started from very, very small businesses and have grown.
And how do people register for that, Tony?
So they just go on to Eventbrite and look up Into the Northwest, the Entrepreneurial Edit, or contact the Chamber and we'll get them sorted out.
Budget time at the Chamber, Tony?
Yes, it is. And we obviously, with our Shop LK brand, we have Halloween coming up and Christmas lights, and Christmas for the Chamber is a big time as well. So we had a really busy Christmas last year, and we think it's going to be as busy this year, and hopefully everybody will be open. So we'll see how Christmas goes. Our retailers are very excited for Christmas, and I think everyone is.
Fingers crossed. Tony Forrester, CEO with Letterkenny Chamber, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today on Business Matters.
Thanks, Kieran.
And there, we'll take a break.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Accelerate your workforce by enrolling them in one of our lifelong learning courses today. Visit lyit.ie for more information. LYIT Faculty of Business, designed by industry, delivered by experts.
My next guest has been a self-employed barber in Letterkenny since 1985. The first lockdown last year prompted Jerry McKeever to pen his first book, Benocracy, Democracy's Last Chance. I caught up with Jerry at his barber shop on Main Street after a busy Friday evening's trade, where we spoke about business, books, and his vision for a new type of ocracy.
I read Harry Watch's item today, and Harry's been very hard on me. He says I'm at it for 40 years. I'm not quite that old. I'm at it 36 years now, and started on the far side of the Market Square, an upper level, and gradually moved up the street where I am now. So I'm 36 years at it.
What was the attraction, Jerry, at that stage?
To barbering. Left school, got two leaving certs. Probably could have gone on if I wanted further on, but lazy. Didn't quite know what I wanted to do. And I was in the FCA, and I was offered by Commandant O'Reilly an ACO course. And because my father had been a barber, I thought, that's what I'll do. I'll drift. So I drifted and did. And you know, it's been a good number because it's not the most pressurized job in the world. You meet people, you pass the day. It's grand. It's a good enough number, you know.
So there's a lot of interaction, and I'm sure a lot of storytelling and a lot of listening.
Yeah, there is. And I think that's the important thing is, you know, is that you're listening. I remember Michael Dunn saying to me, some people listen with their engines running. And it's important if you're having a conversation just to listen. The most important part is to listen. Take it in and then react to that and have your conversation, you know. So that was conversation, the big bit of the job right there.
How long were you down the street, Jerry, and how long were you further up the street here now on Upper Main Street?
I was down the street probably 28 years. Square 2 years, Upper Main Street 28 years. Here 6 years, and I moved in actually 6 years ago, and unfortunately, worked out very well. I had a back operation after moving on here 3 months, and lost a lot of trade because Marty, who works for me, Marty's a great barber, couldn't have found better. He tackled all the trade by himself for 3 months while I was in hospital. He couldn't handle all the numbers coming in the door, so we lost a lot of trade. So it was a... If I'd have moved 6 months later, I wouldn't have lost the trade that I'd gathered through moving up the street. But it's worked out well all the same. We're doing fine. We do a nice trade. Marty's a great man to work with. Can't get on to Marty. You can get on my own. So now, all in all, now, it's been a good move.
Jerry, we're sitting in your barber shop on Main Street, Friday evening, in Letterkenny. The lights are on. It's dark outside. I'm just looking at the walls here. It's cluttered with iconic sporting pictures. Could you talk to me a wee bit about what's sitting around us here?
Well, I think behind me I've got my Republic of Ireland wall because I used to support Southampton up until a few years ago until they wasn't happy with the way they treated their manager and I jumped off board. And so now my only team is the Republic of Ireland, you know, so gladly. And I have that wall. Basically, I have David Langan here from about, I don't know, from 78 here in one picture and I'm on through the years, you know. It's a photograph of Paddy and Shea given here at Fun Park. Things they got up to the modern day. And then of the Premiership wall behind you, Kieran, which I need to update. There's a few players gone of me sporting greats above the cutting units. I have about 25, 30 of those of me. Liverpool, being United pictures, me Barca, me etc. And George Best. And so I've covered the wall fairly well. It's a colourful shop, I think, you know.
Just in relation to the shop, have you any idea how many heads of hair you've cut, Jerry, down the years? Have you ever taken time to calculate an approximate figure?
I never have done. Quick mathematics. Probably got no 6,000-7,000 a year or whatever, and on multiplied on by the years. Although we're busier than anywhere down the street, obviously, you know. So
has the game changed, Jerry? What you do?
Very, very much so. When I first opened, I was one of two barber shops in town. Now I'm one of, the last count was 23, and I haven't counted in a couple of years. I don't think many have closed now. Probably Frank, who's retired, Frank used to work with me. With my dad way back in the late 60s, early 70s, he worked down the Port Road. Frank left a few years ago. There's 22 barber shops, it's changed a lot. But, you know, I'm very lucky. We have an awful lot of loyal customers who are very good to us, you know. And I tell you, we've lost a few over the lockdown, and we found that a lot of them are still me cutting at home, whatever, and I'm still grateful to those people who haven't come back to me, because they put bread on my table for years, and they may have changed their habits now, drifted somewhere else, whatever, getting a cut at home, DIYing, you know, still very grateful because they put bread on my table for years, and if they've changed their habits, good luck to them, and I'm very grateful to them. So all in all, I'm very lucky, I've got a good trade, you know.
Is loyalty the reason that you've remained successful, Jerry, and remained trading?
Oh, it is. There's no way in the world I could have got by with it without my regular customers, you know. No way in the world. We do a passing trade, certainly, and some of those passing trade, they've become new regular customers, you know. No. Letterkenny is a very good town to function in. People still know people, and there's a handful of people come into me 36 years ago when I really didn't even know what I was doing. I threw myself in the deep end after an ankle course and I really wasn't much of a barber, and the people who came in then are still coming in. Very grateful to them because they probably could have found a better barber at the time, you know. So loyalty is very important. Very important, you know.
What's the best lesson you've learned in your own business life, Jay?
God, that's a real curveball, Kieran. I don't know, just I have learned a lesson. In my early days, my opening hour was 10 o'clock. I used to come in about 11. I used to close about 5 instead of 6 o'clock. I used to drift off and go for a cup of tea up in Dillon's Cafe, where I met my wife, Teresa. Used to go out and play snooker with Ian McGeever at 4 o'clock when he should be working. But I've learned now that what you've got to do now is you've got to turn up. You've got to be there. I'm in at 9 in the morning. Don't close 4 or 6. Don't sneak off in the quiet days. It's important to be there because when people are good enough, maybe leave their work at 5:30 to get to you for 6, you've got to be there, you know. So that's what I've learned. You have to be there. And it's not that difficult once you apply yourself to do that properly. Not that hard.
You must have witnessed a lot of changes on Letterkenny's main street in the last 36 years.
A lot. When I was growing up and I lived in the Market Square, all of the shops had people living above them. Even the banks, Bank of Ireland across from us, Ulster Bank, the McLaughlins, Jim McLaughlin, who's now up in AAB, Jim and his family, Paddy's father was the bank manager up in AAB, lived above the banks. Harry Blake opposite him. People lived on the main street, you know, and there's a vibrancy, you know, a camaraderie, which I suppose everything changes, you know, and it's not quite the same. And I'm very old-fashioned, and there's lots of elements of the 80s I would prefer to go back to, but we've got to make progress. We've got to make progress, you know.
Is there a need for us to return to that style, for maybe the vibrancy to come back?
I think there is, you know, and I mean, you know, you look, for instance, at Dublin, they're talking at the moment of, you know, the shop units needing to have people living above them, now empty rooms above them, you know, and maybe making it a sort of a bohemian quarter for artists and et cetera, you know, and if we bring vibrancy back, because there's a shortage of accommodation, obviously, in the country. There's an awful lot of empty places above shops, you know. Offices aren't being used. I mean, I think there's probably 1,450 empty shops in the main street as it is, and that's not even counting Old Main Street. The end premises above all those shops are empty. You know, there's a real opportunity to do that if people, decision makers, were thinking outside the box a bit and were thinking a bit more, you know, blue sky thinking, as I say, you know.
You mentioned opportunity and you mentioned the pandemic. The pandemic provided many things, heartache, and suffering for many. It also provided opportunity, and people did different things with their time.
Mm.
You decided to write a book.
Decided to write a book. I had the idea in my head, and you know, it's a very small thing for us to write the book, because I have a good friend, Pat Boner. I play a lot of snooker with Pat, and Pat's one of these really good guys, you know, and he was ringing around people to see how they were during the pandemic, and just to touch base, you know. Pat rang one day and he said, "Well, what are you doing?" You know, and I would say I'm busy at work. I work hard, but when I'm home, I'm quite lazy, physically lazy. So I said, "I'm thinking of writing a book." So having said that, I felt then that I had to write it. So got to work. Basically, put a lot of ideas I had down on little sheets of paper. Tried to find something to get into their separate chapters, and came up with my chapters and got to work on the book.
Was there always an idea within, at the back of your mind, to say, "I'm going to write a book someday," or did the pandemic prompt it?
The pandemic prompted it. I hadn't thought about a book. I had a notion about it before I said it to Pat, and then once I said it, I kind of had to go there, you know. The idea came from, God rest him, Jim McCormick across the street. Jim was... ran probably what still probably is the best pharmacy in the country. And at the same time, he was chairman, I think, of the Tidy Towns, heavily involved in it. And I remember one Friday, it was about 2010, we're deep into the recession, and was having a quiet Friday to work or stand the door, and was to open it to 7 o'clock, and now it's about 6:45, and things were quiet, and you're thinking, you know, what's the future? How's the country going to go? Is there going to be living in Maid, you know? And I saw Jim coming down the street picking up rubbish because he was involved in Tidy Towns and not afraid to get his hands dirty. And he just thought, you know, if you get a politician like that there, you could go far. People like that. And it's a very idealistic idea, don't get me wrong. How could you convince someone to do that who's basically been, has worked hard for years and built a business, and why should he get involved, you know? But that's the idealistic side, you know, as it'd be great to have something like that, you know.
So the title of your book?
Binocracy. So Democracy's Last Chance.
Okay. So explain that to me, and explain the word, and explain the meaning around it.
Well, binocracy, I was glad to see it was a new word. I put it under me Google, and nothing came up, so I've coined a new word. Democracy by benevolent people, basically. And not only by benevolent, because ideally if you have democracy in a government, you want them to be clever as well. So I'm looking for, what I'd be looking for ideally is intelligent humanitarians to run governments. Now, the book's very generic. It's not about Ireland in particular. It's about any country where the reader can say, our country needs a reboot, our country's dysfunctional. On a scale of dysfunction, maybe 1 to 10, but it's on there somewhere, and the reader feels they need it. I think they should maybe talk to others who think the same and get a ball rolling.
I read the book, Jerry, and it was a very interesting read. It gave a lot of food for thought when I put it down. Did you make a conscious decision not to focus too much on Ireland and Irish economy? And was it more to say what's going on in other countries that was good and maybe avoid what's happening in the bad?
I think I realised, just I don't know where I gravitate there, I think I realised halfway through the book that, you know, that binocracy, I don't want binocracy to be confrontational. I don't want to be saying, you know, this crowd get that wrong, they get that wrong, and I don't want to be the whole childishness of politics, I don't want to get involved in slanging matches. I got a quote from Socrates in the book that basically what we should be doing is looking to what we can get right in the future and getting a body together to do that, as opposed to what other people have got wrong in the past. I don't want to focus on that. So I don't want to go slagging Irish political parties, because I feel that Irish political parties, they get things wrong, they get things right, like every government. I'm not saying how dysfunctional we are. I could say that the US, I think, I could say that Brazil, I could say maybe the UK is dysfunctional at the moment, you know, I feel they are. Whether we are or not, it's up to the reader to decide and where we belong in that scale of dysfunctionality.
The ideal candidates that you talk about, you suggest that they should have a good business acumen, not alone be in business, but I thought it was important that you know that they're able to balance the books.
Yeah.
So you're chatting about people who are competent and,
yes,
and efficient in business.
That's the idea. I mean, ideally, I mean, you know, I don't know, again, whether binocracy can work or not, who knows? I think it's worth giving some to go, people want to talk and think about it, you know, and of course, I mean, the idea is if binocracy is, the ideal scenario would be that if, you know, a group's get together and connect up by internet and talk to people in other counties or other constituencies about getting the same groups going and trying to identify someone in their community, and obviously they're going to try and identify somebody who runs a good business. And, I mean, I think if you run a good SME, and generally in rural towns around, they're probably small businesses rather than medium size. You're going to find that those employers generally treat their staff with respect and treat them well and they get on well and they communicate them. Because, you know, I mean, I think now your larger corporations don't have to treat people with respect. They can give them zero-hour contracts, etc. But the people I'm looking for are people who can communicate with the workers, treat them well and respect them. And obviously the people that are actually asking people to stand as candidates will then focus in on those people, you know.
You mentioned Socrates a number of times, Jerry. The other quote you had was, he believed that it's only people who studied voting should be allowed to vote.
Hmm. Well, it's not. I don't think that's as elitist as it sounds. I think what he meant was, you know, people who take voting seriously. And I think people who understand the ramifications of voting should be allowed to vote. And basically, we should all understand the ramifications of voting. We should all realise it's very, very important. I mean, you look at Brexit. I mean, 17.1 million people voted for Brexit. 16.2 voted against it. There were over 12 million people, 12.9 million people who should have voted, who didn't, you know, and who should have known how important it was.
Do you believe that they knew at the time what they were voting for?
No, I don't. And I think that, you know, I mean, they really should have gotten another vote because, I mean, the campaign was based on lies, and I think everyone admits that, you know. I listened to a guy called James O'Brien on LBC, and, you know, he has a lot of people ringing to say, you know, that Brexit's great and that we're going to be able to make our own laws, and don't like European laws. He'll ask them quite often, say, you know, what European laws do you not like? And they can't tell him one. They say, we want our sovereignty. He says, what does sovereignty mean? They can't tell him what sovereignty means. Brexit was won with a campaign of jingoism and catchphrases and claims of 350 million to be saved on the side of a bus. You know, no, it was very disingenuous. And binocracy's idea, the idea of binocracy is to escape the disingenuous, you know, because I believe that the disingenuous have a great ability to sound more genuine than the genuine people. And a lot of politicians are honest. Some aren't. But how do you tell them apart? My idea of binocracy is if you can get people who are obviously altruistic and have charitable leanings and know what they're doing, their words can be read as a transparent CV because they back them up by actions. And that's the idea of binocracy. Is if you're binocracy, you wouldn't have a Brexit, I don't think, you know.
How challenging would it be for somebody to, say, adopt your philosophy and start this? Because ultimately, it is a calling for people and you're urging people to sort of change their mindset and maybe step up and do something different, Jerry.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, if you read the book, I think you'll understand that I think, and again, it's opinion-based, you know, I mean, you know, and I'm not claimant and winning, I don't know whether getting anything in the book, you might back me up here, as fact-based and then opinions are formed, you know. And I think that basically, people will realise that I think we have three options in the future. And one of them is to keep voting for the sort of people you vote for in whatever country you're talking about and hope that they get it right. And quite often you're telling them, you know, the government should do this, the government should do that. Government are going to do what the government are going to do. You're not going to tell them what they should do. You vote them because they're going to act the way they act. Or number two, fascism is a possibility. The 1930s in Europe, they didn't foresee it, didn't see it coming. I think the French military have just warned the government that unless they get things right, they move on to control. Around about 2008, 2009, after the recession hit, fascism got a good grip in France and Italy. That's possible. And the third option, I think, is that we do something about it, i.e. possibly binocracy, because that's the three only games in town, I think. Either we keep doing what we're doing, wait for fascism, or we take it and actually try to do something. Try.
So if we focus on the third option for a minute, what's your vision for the third option to become a reality?
The first step for binocracy is only for to get the theocracy out there. I want binocracy to be accepted as an ocracy. You have theocracy ruled by priests. You have all sorts of ocracies. I want binocracy to be accepted and to be known of as an ocracy, to give people the alternative to actually choose to go there. And basically all I'd like to see is people who are interested in doing the right thing in politics to basically sit and talk about this, because this thing's going to start very, very small. You know, we saw how exponential growth worked with the coronavirus from one person on and on and on and on, you know. If one or two small groups can gather to talk about binocracy, and then can maybe, it's in my interest too, of course, recommend the book, get the whole idea out there. Just elaborate and think about it and develop it even further. I mean, like, you know, like that book is not the blueprint. That book is the start of it. And clever people like me will take it and say, you know, we could do this, we could do that, we can tweak it here, tweak it there, you know. And that's the idea. That's how you can get started. And then basically form your groups. And, I mean, if you're forming a group, let's say it is Ireland. Form your group in this constituency. Form your groups in Mayo, all over Connacht, all over Munster. Your internet makes you incredibly interconnected. And basically then attempt to find candidates. And if a candidate in Donegal knows that, meanwhile, there's good candidates being approached in other counties and other constituencies, they may take it more seriously, thinking, you know, I'll not end up going to Dublin by myself here. I'll go with 30 other Benecrats. And if they realise that that's a possibility, then your person may take it on. Now, another target for Benecratic candidates is basically to have your group formed. And I would love to get the business people to stand as candidates, but they may not do it. But they will know people through their involvement with charities and business who would be good candidates, so they can help direct us towards that, you know. You might find maybe a particularly good independent politician might want to join the Benecratic group. There are other potential candidates, you know. You're not going to get ideally exactly what you want to ID your business people. It maybe need to be diluted a bit, but that's again for people to talk about, to think about when they're meeting groups.
What sort of reaction have you had so far to the book, Jay?
I've had a limited reaction because I would say at this stage only probably a dozen people have read it, you know. I had a young Flynn actually from Kelly Beggs, his father brings him in, he's going up third level. He thought, and I heard the word that I wanted to hear, very interesting, he said. And I wanted him to say thought-provoking, that's exactly what he said. And he said it was a great book for him because he has an interest in politics, but he reads a few books. But my book, I'm not an academic, I'm not a journalist. My book, I hope everyone can read and understand. He said he really got it. He liked the ideas. And I've had feedback from Tucker Paul McCusker, who told me I needed more meat on the book, so I went from a 50-page book to start to 100, just meet it out, you know. But he said again it was interesting. And what I want to hear is, that's interesting, you know, because I think you said you read it. There's about 2 hours of reading it. I think you got through it comfortably enough, did you?
It was an extremely easy read. And what I liked about it was there was something different coming up all the time, and it wasn't focusing too long on any one subject. And I thought it was very clever, Jerry, that you spoke in the present tense about two things. One was about, you were talking about social media, and you were going to watch a film, and you were going to come back the next day and tell the readers how that went. Could you maybe just talk to me a wee bit about that chapter about social media and your views on social media?
Again, I'm very old-fashioned. I think we'd have done really well with internet and social media. But it's here now, and there's fantastic benefits, so there's no doubt about it, you know. But I do think that what we need to do is, I watched the film The Social Dilemma, and basically it talked about, you know, you're going down rabbit holes, and, you know, if you believe in conspiracy theories, it digs you deeper, and et cetera, you know. And I do think it's very important that, you know, that it's important probably that every member of government watches the film, because every member of government should know how dangerous social media is and how dangerous a phone in your hand is. And another point is maybe children should be made watch the film, because the phone is a fantastic tool. It's a fantastic tool in your hand, your computer in your hand, but it's also very dangerous. And I think that people should know the danger before they put it in their hand, you know.
Is there a wee bit of naivety or a lot of naivety yet among adults in relation to the dangers of
I think, you know, that as a race, you know, social media has been thrown at us very quickly. You know, we're very immature when it comes to it. We don't know how to handle it. We just don't know how to handle it. You know, if you put the benefits and disadvantages of social media in a ledger, there's fantastic benefits on the credit side, but there's dozens more of on the debit side, you know, and we just need to realise that. I mean, I think anyone listening is going to realise, you know, that maybe I spend a bit too much time on the phone. Maybe my children do, you know, and I just think it's something we need to think about. I think in general, there's an awful lot of areas where we sleepwalk into. We should, maybe I think too much, I probably do, maybe because it's because of Barber, talk to a lot of people, get into conversations, but I think we just need to stop sleepwalking into situations. You know, for instance, I mean, and this again is my opinion, I went out to get petrol one day, and I happened to be at the Rathmullen Road, dropped under what used to be Tommy Key's garage, put the nozzle in the tank, press go, no result, press go again, no result. Finally realised you had to put a credit card into it. And I looked in the shop then to see if there's someone in that could actually pay money to, and there was no one there. So I realised, there's no one working here. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, where's the jobs? Where's the jobs, you know? You look at Geordie Sweeney, you look at Eddie Tobin's great garage. Eddie Tobin's your great employer, staff get on them, gives a great service, you know, but he's given employment. And do we really want to go to garages in 10 years' time that give no employment? Do we want to do that, you know?
That was one of the worries that you highlighted in the book, was the fact of the high street or the main streets, the possibility of less happening, fewer employed, fewer stores opening. Mm. What way do we turn that around, Jay?
I think we turn it around. There's a book in that day, there's a chapter in the book called The Serengeti Rules. And the Serengeti Rules is basically an idea that every single environment has a cornerstone ingredient. The guy called Bob Payne discovered in the 60s, 70s, he found rock pools in off the coast of Washington where they had mollusks, they had starfish, they had fish, they had vegetation. And he decided to take an element out of a number of pools, one element of every pool, and he found within about 2 years that the pools you took the starfish out of had nothing but mollusks on them in time. Wall-to-wall mollusks, everything else died. So he found starfish were the vital cog. And the Serengeti always gets named because another scientist actually found that the Serengeti, that when the wildebeest disappeared, the environment died out. When somehow the wildebeest made a comeback, they started eating the grass, trees grew in the plains, leaving an environment for animals. So I think we have a cornerstone ingredient in our capitalistic society. And that ingredient for me is SMEs. And I think we need governments who actually recognise that, you know, we need to look after small to medium enterprises. We need to look after them properly. And, you know, your corporations are going to be the black mollusks in the pool in time. They're going to take over everything. And I think we need to stop sleepwalking and realise we need a government. And I think, again, your benevolent, democratic politicians will know this because they will be SME owners who will know that we need to start looking after society, we need to start looking after that type of business as opposed to just looking after corporate. Corporate's very important too, don't get me wrong, Kieran. It's very important. And I think what we need to do here as well is look after corporate and Ireland. I think we need to build more reservoirs, we need to lay more pipes, we need to make sure more wind power, because if we're going to lose a corporation rate in time, we need to offer the world something. People are going to want to come to Ireland to open factories, and we need to offer them good climate, great workers who can communicate, plus all the infrastructure you're going to need. So, Democrats will look after that end certainly as well. as maybe our government are doing at the moment, but we also have to look after SMEs.
Is there one thing or a number of things that you think could be done easy for SMEs or easier?
I don't really know. I haven't really looked on that. You know, but I mean, the book, as I'm saying, is fairly generic and I do cover a number of topics, you know. I don't know. I mean, perhaps, I mean, basically taxing larger companies more. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't know. Look, I know more about fair play, I think, than politics. And there's a lot I don't know about politics. This idea of a Google owning is $13 billion and the government not accepting it, you know, that seems a bit strange to me. You know, and surely if that sort of money was taken in, then it could be a bit easier on employers. Because, I mean, like, you have a situation now. I was telling Marty works for me here. Marty is a great worker, and I have no qualms with paying Marty. He's well worth the money I pay him. No qualms with paying whatever other I've got to pay him, you know. But the thing is, I mean, you have employers out there who have to pay large amounts of PRC, etc., and employees, etc. If that burden could be slackened a bit due to collecting more on your corporation tax and collecting what's due. I mean, I'm not telling me, maybe we want to hold a corporation rate, surely, if we can. Maybe we can't do it. But, I mean, how can Google and Amazon pay, was it 0.25% on 0.33% tax a number of years ago? You know, it seems a bit strange to me, you know.
Jerry, you mentioned in the book as well that you laid a lot of bugbears down, more or less, in black and white. Mm. Like, listening to you, you've had a lot of these thoughts, a lot of these theories, a lot of these ideas. Mm. I'm sure circulating in the brain for a long time. Mm. Was it therapeutic putting it down, and how satisfying was it when you had the final product in your hands saying,
I've
written the book?
It was probably a rant on a book, you know. And having said that, I mean, I don't want it to be sound cynical rant, because, I mean, the idea of the book is we rant every day. And a lot of the thoughts developed are basically because I converse with people and talk to them. And, like, I could have 10 conversations on the same topic every day with people in the chair. But every customer takes in a different direction, so it's always interesting. You always learn. Every day is a school day. But when I say it's a rant on the book, there may be an element of rant on it and basically diagnosing what's wrong with the world. But I think the key thing about the book is to basically try and identify a solution. Because, you know, you can watch Primetime and you can watch Newsnight on the BBC, and there's an awful lot of people, very intelligent people, letters after their names, know a lot more about everything than I do. But basically what they do is they diagnose what's wrong, they basically dissect it, and we know what's wrong, though. We don't maybe need to know the detail. We know what's wrong. The book I'm writing is hopefully about trying to identify a solution, because we need to stop talking about what's wrong and ranting about it. We need to try and find something about it. And the reason I want Binocracy to be the horse way back, in the, as I've said in the book, is because I think Binocracy is a USP. You could start a new political party tomorrow and people say, what's the difference? The difference between Binocracy and the rest is that you're presenting people that are good at business, know what they're doing, but are also humanitarians. And that's a USP in today's political theatre, I think. So basically, you know, I think the book has identified a solution, and that's what we need to start doing. And I want Binocracy to be the horsey back, because it has a USP. You might get another party come along, but it could split your vote. We need to back one horse. And I would love everyone to get behind Binocracy. Activists, you know, anyone, there's a crowd now in the UK looking for every house in the UK to be insulated. They're clogging up London at the moment. They're all getting arrested. They're protesting in London. The people like them should get behind Binocracy, because a democratic government will actually do what they want them to do. They won't have to be told. They'll do the right thing. So any activists out there, be they work with, you know, Amnesty International, raising money for hospitals, etc., could be well employed getting behind Binocracy, because democratic leaders will, I think, be empathetic. I think it's said in the book that, you know, sympathy, a lot of politicians will have sympathy when something goes wrong. And they mean it when they say that, you know, they feel terrible for victims of catastrophes, etc. They do mean it. But sympathy, I think, is temporary. And they may mean to act, but they don't always do it. Democrats, I think, in general, idealistically, will be empathetic. And therefore, that sympathy will be permanent. And they're going to want to help things and do things. So the idea is not just a rant on the book, but they actually come up with an idea to fix things.
The thought struck me reading the book, Jerry, and since I read it and speaking to you tonight, you tick all the boxes of the ideal person or the ideal candidate that you're talking about?
No, I don't feel. I don't feel I am really. I don't feel I have the confidence, the ability, the I don't need. Do you need a brass neck to be a Democrat? Maybe you need a brass neck to be an ordinary politician. I just don't see it. I don't see it. I mentioned I was talking to Harry Watts last week, and I mentioned two people, and there are more councillors than these 2 years ago. But I remember when I was maybe 20s, you know, I think I went out once with Lawrence Blake to campaign the doorstep, and once with Jim Lynch, and but these were two guys who I remember talking to Lawrence Blake, and who said that, you know, that he would go out for a night maybe, and someone come to the door and say, you know, I have a problem, I want to talk about, you know, as a councillor, you know, and Lawrence might give us a night out up to talk. And these boys weren't getting paid. These boys were urban councillors. And, you know, let's say for instance a Democratic government said that they were going to do away with 37 councillors in Lufford and go down to 5, but that you could form urban councils, voluntary urban councils, who would actually hear people's gripes, bring it to the council, then the council could bring it to the Democrats in Dublin, you know. I would probably stand to be an urban councillor, but that's all I could see it happening, you know. I don't see myself going the distance. I don't think so.
And finally, Jerry, just bringing things back to business, what lies ahead for Jerry's Barber and his philosophy on democracy?
I don't know about the book. Idealistically, I love the book too, just to do well, obviously. But for me, the main thing would be that I would rather sell hundreds of books to people who really want to do something, as opposed to thousands of a could who maybe you're going to look and say interesting and do nothing. I just basically would like people to talk about it first, because the book may instruct people to instigate it, but that's not the first step. The first step is to basically talk about it. I think we need to talk about solutions as opposed to the problems that are there, and actually try and find proactively a way to push on through.
And very finally, are you here for the long haul on Main Street?
I think so. Someone said once to me that barbers generally die with their boots on, you know, so I don't see retirement or anything. And I was just talking to Teresa, my wife, who she typed the book up for me, and very patient, very, very patient woman. I was just saying, you know, about retirement, that I don't really want to retire. I mean, the ideal scenario would be 2 days a week. Coming 2 days a week would be lovely. 3 wouldn't be so bad. You know, I'm doing 4 at the moment, which is great.
Did Marty run the show?
Marty's more than capable of running the show, you know. But, sorry, by the way, there's one more person I want to thank as well, actually, if you don't mind, as after thanking Teresa. Stevie Toy at Logopix. Stevie, very diligent worker. He does photography too. He does brochures, catalogues, wedding photography, the whole works, you know. And I added to this book probably. Stevie formatted the book for me, and he designed the cover. I designed the cover, but he realised it for me, you know. And I went back maybe 8, 9, 10 times and added little things here and corrected punctuation here, etc., you know. And he actually had to take the book off Amazon 3 or 4 times and put it back up again for me, you know. And very patient. I want to underline patient. But he did lose his patience with me once. The last time I made a change to the book, I actually added a small observation on something that Jordan Peterson said. And if you ever read a book, you'll probably read it 20 times, because you're going through it to see what you can get right. And you're kind of proofreading it all the time, you know. And I asked Stevie to add this, you know. And finally Stevie said to me, he says, Jerry, you have to stop reading that book. So he actually lost patience, you know, but I do understand. He was very nice. I have to thank Stevie. I have to thank Brown's Printers. He did a fantastic job of 1,000 book print up and selling them in the shop. And Bookmark have been very good to actually take it. And David Gamble down there was very good. Been very encouraging as well. Niamh down the street, very good to me, you know. So those few people I have to thank, you know, because, I mean, it's very daunting to go out and push a book, because I'm not in my comfort zone even speaking to you. I'm not in my comfort zone putting myself out there to do this, you know. And I needed that encouragement. People who've actually encouraged me in the shop, Michael McMenamin came in one day, said he thought it was a great book. He thought it had something. And to hear that is massive.
It's massive to have that encouragement, you know. And without those few words, not going from Kelly Beggs and from like Sir Michael, and I wouldn't be here talking to you tonight, and I probably wouldn't have pushed the book, you know. So the push starts now.
That was Letterkenny barber and author Jerry McKeever. Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guests, Tony Forrester and Jerry McKeever. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound. And thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.